You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun. A Sopranos podcast hosted by both of us. And we, for those of you who it is your first time listening, welcome to the only Sopranos podcast that has ever existed. Now you might say, hey, I've gone onto iTunes and seen tons of other Sopranos podcasts. I don't know what you're talking about. Well, guess what? All of those guys, their podcasts are bullshit. Ours is the real deal. Ours has everything that you would have on The Sopranos. We have Italians. We have Jews. We have swearing. We have
nudity.
Full frontal nudity.
That's right.
You're getting nothing but the purest Sopranos analysis on this podcast.
Yeah, those other ones are fugazi.
They are fugazi. See, other podcasts, they wouldn't know what that means.
No, only us.
Only we know what fugazi means because we saw the movie Donnie Brasco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wonderful post-punk band.
Yes. Yeah. It was the guy from Minor Threat started another band. Mm-hmm. These are things we know.
That's
and
right.
This is the kind of information that you can expect to get from this, the greatest Sopranos podcast that has ever existed.
Matt, what episode are we doing this week?
Oh boy, Vince. We are now on episode 11 of The Sopranos, season 1, episode 11. It's called Isabella. And I got to tell you, every other podcast that we've done so far, we've had just a plethora of super famous guests, people from LP from Run the Jewels to creator of Shit My Dad Says, Justin Halpern, to the host of News Broke and a show on TYT, and also a upcoming show on MSNBC, Francesca Fiorentini, who's also my girlfriend, and I love her very much. But today...
Felix Biederman from Chapo Trap House.
Biederman.
We got all the guests. It's great.
We got all the big guests on this wonderful Sopranos podcast, but this is the first time we have zero guests in the front quarters.
That's right. So we just wanted to prove that we could do it, just the two of us, if we needed to, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. It's like... we were always dependent on, oh, who's our big name guest going to be? But then we saw that the big name guest was inside of both of us all along.
Yeah, it was the friends we made along the way.
And so, no guests, just us this week. Hope that's okay with you wonderful listeners out there. And again, we're doing from season 1, episode 12, Isabella. And I think before we get into this, I think... we should let all of our new listeners listen to the theme song.
Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast.
And now that we've got the theme song out of the way, we are going to get into our first segment on Pod Yourself a Gun. This is a classic segment that we do.
Classic segment. We've been doing it from the beginning.
Yeah, it's called Corrections from Last Week. That is where we get something wrong, and then you guys call in to tell us the things that we got wrong. So,
yeah, exactly. As opposed to call out culture, this is call in culture.
That's right.
Because people, you know, they want to let us know we're wrong, but they don't want to humiliate us. And also, I believe they directly called in this time to tell us we're wrong, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Call in culture. See, the joke works.
It does work. And here we are.
Hey, guys. This is Joe. Big fan of the Pod Yourself a Gun podcast. Just listened to your latest episode. Nobody was any great time. Though I had an issue with your guest. He, early in the episode, you talked about whether or not you guys knew that Big Pussy was a rat. And he insisted that earlier in the season, the audience was told. He's 100% wrong. He's confusing seasons. We do not find out until the second episode.
I knew it!
The second episode of the second season that Pussy is actually a rat. At the end of that episode, we are actually supposed to believe he ran away because of what Tony believes, but that Jimmy Altieri is in fact the rat. They confused, you know, the fat guy with the other fat guy. It is supposed to be, I mean, audiences can figure it out if they want to, but it's supposed to be a big shock in season two that when all is said and done, he was a rat just like Jimmy was. In fact, some even theorized that Jimmy was never a rat. But I agree with what you were saying. That scene where in the basement with Tony makes it pretty obvious, almost too obvious. But loved your guest. He was great, but he was wrong.
And since you had a correction for us, thank you for that, by the way, I have a correction for you.
For you, motherfucker.
Which is, it was actually me who confused that we already
oh,
knew.
Oh, it was?
It was me. I was the one who pushed, because the reason why is because I was doing a food challenge in which I was going back to watch the episode where they go to Italy.
Yeah.
Because I was making the mussel pasta with squid ink. For this food challenge I was doing, and I was kind of studying that. And in that episode, I think we see that Big Pussy is a rat at that point, and I got my wires crossed because I watched two episodes from different seasons in the same week. I think that's why.
Wait a second. The episode where they go to Italy?
Yeah.
They go to Italy in like the third season?
Oh, well, we might have to have a correction for...
We're going to have a correction here because I tell you, I don't remember finding out that, what's his name? Big Pussy
it's actually,
was a rat.
No, you're actually wrong. It's season 2, episode 4, Commendatori. That's when they go to Italy. You guys can look forward to that one.
Wait,
it's a great episode.
Season 2 is when they go to Italy.
That's correct.
Wow, that just seemed like such like a later Sopranos thing, man. You know, that's the thing about this world building that they've done with this show is like every season of Sopranos is so goddamn good that any of these things could have happened at any other point. They came into finding their voice so fast. Amazing. Commendatory. Yeah. That's what Paulie says when he's trying to like, you know, he's at the cafe and he's just trying to greet people.
Yeah, isn't that nice, Commander?
Yeah, yeah. It's a nice way to greet people. Well, yeah. Cool. Thank you for your correction. Always welcome, because that's the thing. We're not gonna get everything right, you know? We watch the show, but, you know, no man is perfect.
Also, if we get stuff wrong and you get hung up on it, guess what? You're a nerd. We don't care.
Yeah. If you're mad at us, we're actually the types of people who will be mad at you.
Yeah, if you want to listen to like a Sopranos podcast where they talk about, you know, where they get into like character psychology and like color theory and you know, what the oranges symbolize.
Yeah.
Like that. Hey, look, I was a film major and I remember talking about all that stuff. And guess what? It was really boring.
No one likes it. Given
a shit about symbolism or color theory. I think it's all lame and we're not going to cover
dumb.
That. And you can listen to one of those Fugazi podcasts if that's
listen
what you want.
Listen to the Fugazi ones. We are the real deal. We don't talk about stuff like motif, symbolism. We talk about like the art of it.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
We're artists.
We're artists and we are art critics.
Okay. So this episode, Isabella, we're going to go to the Wayback Machine.
Yeah.
This episode came out March 28th. 1999, great week of a great year.
What a year! What a year we had in 1999. What a year! That was it. Was the year that the Sopranos came out.
Uh huh. Columbine.
Was Columbine 1999?
Sure was.
I thought that was third season of Sopranos. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, 1999. A lot happened.
Some things that happened on March 28th, WrestleMania 15. At the First Union Center in Philadelphia, Stone Cold Steve Austin beat The Rock in a no disqualification match for the WWF heavyweight title. It was still called the WWF back then.
Yeah, before they sued the World Wildlife Federation or Foundation, and then they got countersued and actually lost.
That was pretty great. That's my favorite thing about the World Wildlife Federation.
Good for them.
Good for them.
Fuck you, WWE.
That's right. Jack Kevorkian was on trial for, you know, helping people commit suicide and being Armenian.
Yeah. It was definitely an Armenian thing. It was anti-Armenian. You know, this is pre-Kardashian. So, like, people didn't realize that it's okay. Armenians are white now.
Yeah, we get discriminated against. It's not a big deal. One of the most oppressed minorities, and I feel that as a quadroon. at the box office, Forces of Nature and Analyze This beat out the first weekend of Ed TV, which was actually the lesser known of the Truman Show type movies.
It was the ants to the Truman Show's A Bug's Life.
It was the Dante's Peak to, or he was, it was the volcano to the Truman Show's Dante's Peak.
I don't know about that. I put those in reverse. Dante's Peak was not as good as Volcano.
Well, you know what? I think it was lesser known, and I think Ed TV is actually underrated. Like McConaughey.
Was Volcano was lesser known?
I think so. I feel like Dante's Peak was bigger, wasn't it?
I mean, it had Pierce Brosnan, but didn't Volcano have Tommy Lee Jones?
That sounds right.
That's a big name. I think it had like Tommy Lee Jones and someone who kind of looked like Anna Paquin, and that's a star-studded lineup.
Yeah, lifetime gross Dante's Peak was $67 million.
Yeah,
and Volcano was $49 million. So
you're right.
Well,
when you're right, you're right.
Including
Vince.
Worldwide, it was 122. But you know, look, we don't want to split hairs here. Let's not split hairs.
I was more of a Deep Impact person than I was an Armageddon person.
Of course, you were. So that's it for the way. On the airwaves, "Believe" by Cher was still the number one song, same as last week. Rock.
Do you believe?
I do believe in life after love.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, sure. I've never experienced it, but...
It sounds awful.
Sounds terrible. So that's the Wayback Machine. In this episode, a little bit of trivia. It was written by a woman, Robin Green.
Now, was this the first episode to be written by a woman in the series?
Let's see. What else did she write? She wrote...
You know what? We're not that podcast. Yeah, let's just stop this in its tracks.
We're going to say that she was.
Yeah, let's just say that she was. And you know what? If you have a correction, fucking call the correction hotline.
Yeah. Do you think that is why there are not any boobs in this episode? Or do you think there were so many boobs?
Oh, interesting.
Or do you think there were so many boobs in the last episode that they decided to tone it down for this one?
Yeah, they were like, listen, there's only so many juicy titties that you can have in an episode there's a quota in every HBO creator's contract for how many boobies they can have. And I think they went a little bit overboard in the last episode and they decided, you know what? Not today.
Yeah.
Not today. This one is going to be no boobs and a lot of action.
That's right. The co-star who plays the titular Isabella. See, that's a double entendre.
Oh, that was very good.
Is Maria Grazia Cozzinotta, who was
Maria Grazia Cozzinotta.
She's also known for Il Postino, and she was a Bond girl in The World Is Not Enough.
Oh, yeah, she totally was. That's right. And she's just... she's just a very gorgeous, gorgeous lady to look at, and very well cast.
She does look like our...
I mean, she's the perfect Italian dream woman.
Yeah, she looks like what we would imagine a beautiful Sicilian woman to look like.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just gorgeous.
And let's do Bada B stories for this episode.
Yeah, let's get into all the wonderful Bada B stories. First and foremost, you have Tony's depression, you know, you've got Pussy as runaway. He is nowhere to be found. You have Junior. He wants to take revenge on Tony and has put a hit out on Tony for having all these meetings behind his back over at Green Grove, where his mother, Livia Soprano, has, you know, been held captive. You've got Jimmy Altieri still up to his old tricks, trying to get people to say stuff on tape, allegedly. then you've got the actual failed hit of Tony Soprano. I think my favorite storyline, the prom with AJ. AJ yeah. is going to his junior prom and has no interest in actually going.
Is it prom? Is it like, do junior high schools have proms? He's like in eighth grade at this point, right?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. It couldn't be a junior. It would be a junior high prom. I'm not sure. All I know is there's a limo involved, and I'm like, listen, I don't know what middle school he's going to, or there's a fucking limo involved. I mean, obviously, it's a private Catholic school, so, you know, the kids there have money.
Yeah.
But, if you're dressing up and going in a limo with a date, that's prom. I don't care what the fuck it is. Mm-hmm.
I didn't even go to a limo to my actual prom in high school. So, dad was not a mob boss, unfortunately.
That's right. That's right. Because is your dad Italian? No, your dad's the Armenian one.
No, my dad's Italian. Yes. Hence, my last name being Mancini.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot. All right. I forgot who I was talking to. I've had a long day, Vince.
Sure.
Mentini. So those in essence are the Bada B stories, and then of course there is the titular one, pun very much so intended and stolen from Vince, Isabella, the Sicilian dream woman who is house sitting for the Cusimanos, who may or may not be a figment of his depression medication.
That's right. There's so general thoughts on the episode.
Loved it. Yeah. End of podcast.
Yeah. Hard A. We're done. We're out of here.
Hard A. Yeah.
It was a good solid episode. It's definitely one of the most well structured in terms of plot, in terms of lots of things happening.
Yes. Yes.
It's weird. It's simultaneously one of the most plot driven episodes.
Yes.
And yet there also feels like there's weird padding in it. Like,
oh, really? Where'd you feel the padding?
I mean, the whole Isabella storyline, it's a bit much.
I mean, I guess so. It mostly in terms of like, it doesn't serve anything other than, number one, they were like, well, we can't show nipple, but we can show a big titted woman. No, I mean, I thought it was an interesting device to show Tony's kind of emotional unraveling and also him coming to grips with, you know, his realization that his best friend might be a snitch. Like, yeah. I thought it was a good way of doing it. And sure, it's a little bit heavy handed with the, like, you know, that's your mother. She right. represents your mother.
He has. So first of all, he has an extended dream sequence of the, you know, of the classic horror movie dream sequence where you show up somewhere and you tell them about everything that just happened. And they're like, yeah. Oh, Isabella hasn't lived here for over 100 years.
Yeah. Isabella burned down 3,000 years ago.
Yeah. And meanwhile, there's a scene where Tony takes Isabella to lunch somewhere. And then he has a dream in the middle of his lunch with Isabella, who is also a dream. So he's got they pioneered the double dream sequence that we would later go on to see.
In Inception.
In Inception and in Batman v Superman, there's a few double dream sequences in there.
Yeah, a lot of dreams within a dream within a dream that he had. And I got to say, in terms of Sopranos-esque dreams, this isn't... originally I thought like this was a mega Only in Dreams episode, our segment Only in Dreams, in which we break down the dream. But for this one, because the whole, you know, Edward Norton is Tyler Durden the whole time twist of it, they are not trying to give away that this is a dream. Although looking back at it, you know, it's actually not even fairly clear looking back at it. They made it as realistic as possible.
Yeah.
Some reason a dental student who's studying tumors of the gum.
Yeah.
But of course, cancer is a, and I know I said I wouldn't say this word, but I'm doing it, a motif in The Sopranos, mm-hmm, kind of mm-hmm. representing, you know, mortality and whatnot. So, you know, there's that. But just in general, it was kind of like, they made her seem as real as possible so that when you found out it was like a dream the whole time or some sort of weird, you know, psychosis, you're like, what?
Yeah. But the flip side of that is that, I mean, you kind of, when you see Isabella, your first instinct is like, oh yeah, right. His neighbor just happens to have this beautiful exchange
right.
student who is going to flirt with, you know, 47-year-old overweight mob boss neighbor. You're like, yeah, right, that couldn't happen. And then when you find out it's a figment of his imagination, you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah it does, it totally makes sense. And you know, again though, the fact that he is a 47-year-old fat dude means nothing, because James Gandolfini has got to be the sexiest fat man who ever walked the face of the earth. Like, the dude, If that dude was talking to Isabella, if that was a real woman, I absolutely believe that she would be enamored with him. There's just something about him.
Oh, he's got big boss energy.
He's got that big boss energy. It's just that BBE, dude. And,
yeah,
like, there's just something about him that I think is just magnetic. And I get it, dude. The dude is a fucking snack. Let's be
sure.
real.
He's thick with
goddamn. Oh, he's thick.
But then, you know, even that dream part, that dream sequence aside, if you go into the double dream sequence, even the dream within a dream is not very abstract either. And not only is it not very abstract, then Melfi comes later in the episode and then just explains exactly what everything in it means, which is helpful.
Which is helpful if you were born stupid. and had never seen anything or heard any storytelling or read anything. But, I mean, yes, again, it was a little bit heavy-handed with that whole thing. But I didn't look at it as filler. I thought it was done.
Sure.
It was an interesting plot point, and I think worthy of the title of the episode.
Filler is too strong a word, but I do think it's slightly too on the nose in a weird way. It's just it's a little heavy-handed, but you go with it because so many things are happening that are compelling. And
yeah.
Yeah, I do have a clip of Melfi explaining the entire dream sequence right here.
Did the baby have a name?
She was calling Antonio.
Anthony, your fantasy, that's That's you, that little baby. And Isabella, that she was nursing you.
Fuck me.
I've never been to talk therapy, but I don't know if they're that specific when they're explaining your dreams.
I mean, especially given the fact that she has never really told him straight up anything what anything means before, and he's been frustrated by this. It is kind of one of those strange moments where, you know, she just decides to explain exactly what's going on in the show. It's almost like that was like a note from the network executives who were like, explain the dream.
Yeah. Can you make this more clear?
Yeah. People are fucking stupid. All right.
Well, they're still used to network audiences at this point. I don't like we're not
sure.
We haven't come into the heyday of prestige TV yet. So you got to explain things
sure
a little
haven't.
More clearly. Other thoughts on this episode, going into the junior aspect of this episode, I feel like this was, we're watching that Gore Vidal quote play out, you know, where the quote where he's like, you know, the most dangerous thing in the world is a sissy with a gun. Like you give a sissy with a gun, a sissy a gun and he'll kill everything in sight. This is like Junior is at his, because he's like weak, he's so much more ruthless. Like he figures out that Tony has undermined him. He immediately wants to have him killed. And then there's the scene with, I don't know the guy's name who they contracted the hit out to.
But that guy's, he's a character actor I've seen on a few HBO shows. He played a version of the guy who directed The Brown Bunny in he was like a Vincent Gallo, is that the name
that's
of
his
that
name yeah
guy? He was like a Vincent Gallo type on Entourage, and go ahead. That guy was contracted to kill Tony, or at least to find people to do so.
And so, and then Junior's like worried about the hit and he's like, I don't like that, and so they immediately just shoot that guy in the head. We see how dangerous, like a mob boss who has a inferiority complex or a weakness complex is way more dangerous than one who's tough.
But here's a question I have. Do you think that when he was saying he didn't like the fact that the guy was, you know, he had a big mouth because he was making fun of the fact that Tony's mom wants him killed? Do you think that he wanted what's that guy, Fuckface McGee,
Mikey Palmese?
You think he wanted Mikey Palmese to whack him? Because the reaction that he had when he shot him was kind of like he looked startled.
Yeah,
it looked like he had never
ambiguous,
like, yeah. And which leads me to wonder, like, how often has Junior ever been put in the position to push a button on a guy in mob speak? Like, how often is he? I know he, it's implied that he had something to do with the Pussy Malanga hit, which happened before, in the first episode of The Sopranos, or second, which is something you never see happening. But like, his reaction to that was so startled that it startled me. It started making me go, like, I understand that he's a sissy with a gun, but how sissy are we talking here?
Right.
Like, is he someone who has been shielded from this violence in some way? Because you never see him. He's never hanging out with the guys, you know, at the
I don't think he's been.
Seeing the violence firsthand, you know, you never really see him in a position to see violence like that.
I don't think he has been in the position where he has psychopaths trying to please him before.
Yes,
I think that's what it was. And when he said, you know, I don't like this because he doesn't like to be reminded that Livia has essentially ordered this hit, because again makes him feel like weak again because he's not calling the shots. And then as soon as he says the guy he has a big mouth, that was kind of like the guy's death warrant, because you can't imply that a guy's a rat in front of Mikey Palmese, because, you know, Mikey Palmese just wants to kill people.
Right, right. So, I mean, he must have known that that is what's going to happen. He must have known that the dude was just, but maybe he just wasn't expecting him to just shoot him right there.
I don't think
then.
He knew that that was going to happen. I think he has a knee-jerk reaction to anyone bringing up Livia being behind this hit, and it's in the first scene. It's in the first scene too, where they're at the funeral parlor. Where I have a clip of that also.
In his mouth about the Brendan Falone hit. Is that what him and my other cop was talking about behind my back at that fucking old folks' home?
Well, the meeting's adjourned at the Green Grove. Chucky and I spoke to Donnie P and the thing. It's happening tomorrow.
That quick. Good.
Yeah. Black guys. It'll never lead back. They gotta be shit doing this place.
Look at her like that. Mario Lee gave me my first hand job. Me and Vincent Maniscalco in the alley behind the chicken market.
Junior.
God, what am I saying at this poor woman's wake?
I just wanted to let you know, that's all, so she didn't have to worry. Everything's taken care of about Tony.
Let's go.
When I was a little kid, no older than that, I always used to wonder why nobody collected prayer cards like they collect baseball cards. Thousands of bucks for Honus Wagner and jack shit for Jesus, huh, Mike?
It's going down on a newsstand that he goes to by the medical center.
Where he spills his guts in some fucking shrink's carpet.
So I just like that Junior's trying to reminisce, and Junior really has missed his calling as like a right-wing radio host, because he's like,
oh,
hey,
totally.
What's the world coming to? We got, you know, people are trading baseball cards instead of prayer cards.
You know, they don't even say the Pledge of Allegiance in class no more. That's why we got all this violence in the world.
You know who I think is the MVP of the NBA? Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, like, he seems to want to avoid, you know, directly not just talking about the hit, but even just thinking about it.
Right.
Because it's just like for him, he just wants to say it's done and have it be over with. Like, that's why, you know, when it doesn't happen and the first thing he does is vomit, it's just like, that's when you know, oh man, this guy is that sissy with a gun. Like, this dude,
well, he just
is,
wants to
not
he wants to reminisce
this.
And people keep stopping him from reminiscing.
Right yeah I mean, that's really, you know, the problem, he just got into the wrong business.
That's right,
right.
Yeah.
Things
were better.
Been...
hand jobs used to be awesome.
Yeah hand jobs were great, you know, especially when done by an elderly woman.
You bought your meat from a chicken market.
Yeah, that back when America was great.
The chicken market is a really enjoyable phrase for me.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because
hey Vince.
Hey Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s, and he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When the hit does get carried out, and Tony survives, there's that great scene where both Livia and Junior are freaking out about it. And that's when, you know, and I've rewatched the series multiple times trying to pinpoint the truth about Livia, whether or not she actually knew what was happening, whether or not she wanted Tony dead, whether or not, you know, is she, you know, faking her dementia? Is she is Junior misreading her the way he was misread by Mikey Palmese?
And the answer is no. The answer is absolutely not. And
I think this is the closest to being absolutely not. This is, to me, it's this episode and the next episode where it's like it feels fairly clear that Livia is orchestrating this, but it's still, honestly, it's still kind of up in the air. I don't know.
I got
for
the
sure.
clip where I think she all but basically tells him to do it. It's just okay. It's they're outside. It's supposed to be windy, which is kind of funny because I don't think they actually had a wind on the day they were supposed to shoot that, so they had to like overcompensate with the sound effects a little bit.
Yes.
Which I think is funny.
Yeah.
But just the dialogue. I feel like she all but orders it here.
Either way, it comes down to the dinner table.
I don't want to know.
In his bathrobe at 7 o'clock in the evening.
Some bargain. That's all anyone should have to pay for a movie.
My cousin Keke, after he had his lobotomy, he looked exactly like my son.
Livia.
Empty. A shell. Better Keke had died than go on living like that. That's what his own mother always used to say.
Talk about it anymore. I don't want to...
Better he should be dead. That's what his own mother used to say.
Okay, yeah, but that is not out of the ordinary for Livia to be talking about. She's been talking about infanticide the entire season. Like that's her main go-to thing.
Well, you what Freud said about wanting to kill.
Yeah, right. No, I get that there's a subconscious thing there for sure where she's ordering the death of her own son. But again, like the question is, how conscious is it? How conscious is she that she is putting all of this in motion? You know, because like she says three things. The entire show is her saying, "I don't like that kind of talk," and it's you know, you hear about the you know, the mother who killed her babies, and it's something racist. You know, it's like, it's those things.
Well, that's because her and Junior's generation. They're both doing the same thing, is where they know they want the horrible thing, but you're not allowed to talk about the horrible thing. Where she's, you know.
True. True.
You can want your son dead, but you still get upset when people just tell you what you just said back to them, basically.
Yeah, and again, I don't. To me, the biggest, like the most clear point at which I felt like, oh, yeah, she definitely ordered the hit was her random onset of dementia.
Yeah.
Where she all of a sudden doesn't recognize Meadow.
Yeah.
And that's because
the old dementia dodge.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, and Junior even says, like, you know, oh, it's a really convenient time for you to start forgetting things, mm-hmm. you know. So to me, that kind of spells it out pretty quickly, pretty clearly that she is, she's faking it in order to, like, try to get off the hook for this. But yeah, you know, what I'm really trying to say is the actress playing Livia and the writing of that character is so fucking perfect
yeah.
that we still can't say definitively whether or not she is actually, you know, consciously trying to have her own son killed.
Yeah. And then
that's what I think.
Yes, I agree with that. And two great scenes that I want to highlight in this episode. First of all, just the way that hit scene is shot is pretty great. You know, we go from slow motion when he sees it like Tony sees it all about to play out and then it goes back into regular mode, like life goes into normal speed once it starts to happen, and he sort of snaps him back into reality. I thought that was great.
Yep.
That being said, this is another example of incompetent black criminals in this show.
I know
just becoming a little bit of a trope. I don't know,
sure is. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, they're always trying to toe that line between like, no. You see, the show isn't racist. It's the world of the show is racist. But then they are like, but all of our black characters are bumbling oafs.
Yeah.
It's pretty racist.
It's on the line because like sort of everybody like almost
everyone's bumbling. Yeah,
everyone's bumbling. And I do think that there is a higher truth that every plot involves at least like three fuck ups
yes.
in real life.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
But then the way they talk about it afterwards is very much like, oh yeah, the black guys fucked it up.
Yeah, completely. And I love that they're like, you know, don't worry, the hitmen are a couple black guys, so it'll never get traced back to us, which is, that to me is a very funny, intentional, like, racist logic that they wrote in,
yeah.
which is like, you know, how black guys just left and right are killing white people, you know, like just all the time. You can't go to your local corner store and buy some orange juice without a couple of black guys running up on you and killing you. Like as if a couple of black guys killing a mob boss wouldn't immediately be read as a hit.
Well, you know? I mean, they might be correctly, assuming the racism of the police who come to look at it,
the racism of the racism of the mob boss who was just like, oh, you know, don't worry, it was just the blacks. Like, you know, but no, come on. Like any mob boss who's getting killed is immediately like, you know, there very rarely is there a random killing of a mob boss except for that QAnon guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, except for in Staten Island where the Gambino boss got killed by a QAnon guy because the mob boss didn't want some crazy QAnon truther seeing his daughter, which would have been an incredible Soprano storyline.
Oh my God, just the perfect one. And the worst part is like, that I think would be AJ. AJ would be the QAnon kid.
Yeah.
Just, you know, killing a mob boss because he's just like, I've been reading some stuff online. You should check it out.
Yeah, or Brendan Fallone. I could see, you know, if Brendan Fallone was still alive, I could see him being a QAnon guy.
Now, did you notice the Godfather reference in the attempted hit?
With the oranges?
That's right, baby.
I did not, because again, I do not give half of a shit about symbolism, but I did read Alan Sepinwall's essay about it where he brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, but it's, you know, I think for a show about people who are obsessed with The Godfather, I thought it was a nice little, you know, it's throwing them a bone.
Sure.
Or,
yeah, well, as soon as he bought the orange juice, like, I immediately was like, man, that's a big thing of orange juice to buy, which I guess fits in with, you know, you're depressed and you're in your bathrobe and you just want to drink a whole jug of orange juice that day.
Yep.
Yeah, but then it immediately became like a prop in the killing, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, you know, luckily they shot the orange juice and didn't shoot him. But yeah, again, you know, the hit failed and immediately revived a depressed Tony, which is wonderful if you think about it, because like what I got from that is that like the depression that Tony is feeling with the whole pussy, you know, big pussy problem where he might be a snitch and has now run away and he's not sure and all that stuff. Like that's the stuff that he has to focus on in that moment is like he feels like that's all that he has to focus on. There's nothing else in his life going on other than this one terrible thing. He even says when he's in therapy, like, I don't even know why I come here anymore. I guess I got nothing else to do. And it's like, of course you have other things to do, Tony. I mean, you literally run all of crime in North Jersey. But the moment that someone tries to kill him, what he's really feeling isn't just the adrenaline of that, but it's kind of like, thank God I have something else to focus
right.
on.
Right. Like, I think it's very believable that your brain would put, you know, existential depression on the back burner when you're dealing with, you know, a direct threat to your life.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. But I absolutely believe that what that hit did for him emotionally was refocus his brain from like, okay, now I'm not bored. Now I have something
yeah,
to do.
I got a job.
Now,
yeah.
I got a job to do. You know, it's like, you know, because if you're just thinking about your friend possibly being a snitch and you're just like, well, I run North Jersey and fucking collecting money, but what's the point? You know, he's got normal rich dude depression.
Yeah, but now he's important enough that someone wants to kill him. So
exactly, yeah. It's flattering almost. Exactly. He's just like, ooh, you know, now he gets to do what he does best, which is solve his problems with violence. Because there's nothing you can do when you know you're he's got his best friend is run away. He's sad about that. You know, he can't even kill him. He can't even solve this problem with violence, and now he can.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a wonderful point that the show made.
Yeah, that was excellent. And then also just this episode in a larger sense is sort of the culmination of this kind of mommy dearest storyline where his mom wants to kill him, which I don't know. I like it as a plot point. I don't necessarily find it like necessarily super believable. Like I was thinking more about the writers, and I was trying to think whether it's a Gen X thing or a Boomer thing to sort of think that your parents hate you enough to want to kill you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, to me, it seems very personal and specific to David Chase and his relationship with his mother, rather than being like necessarily a generational thing. Mm-hmm.
But don't you think, I feel like that's a very generational thing where boomers and Gen X are just like, oh man, you know who I'd fight? I'd fight my dad.
Yeah, that's true. They all want to beat up their dad, and it's all in self-defense because they think that, you know, and maybe, yeah, that generation was probably beating the shit out of their kids, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of get it. It definitely could be generational, but in terms of, like, this particular, you know, psychosis of Livia Soprano, it's so specific that all you can think is, fuck, David Chase's mom was fucked up. Holy shit, yeah. Bro. Listen, I don't have a perfect mom. You know, she calls me and gets me worried about my other family members sometimes. And like, she tends to over exaggerate, you know, just how fucked up everyone else's lives are sometimes. And yeah, you know, it's like sometimes she can keep me on the phone for longer than, you know, maybe I have time
for. She doesn't take the cues that you want to get off the phone. She just steamrolls right through them.
Exactly. But at the end of the day, you know, if I see her in person, we'll have a 2-hour long conversation and it will be wonderful. She's a great conversationalist. Love my mother. Great person. Has never once hinted that she wants me dead. And, you know, even in her worst moments, I still believe that she would want me alive. Mm-hmm. So I just can't I can't imagine this is anything but a very, very personal, you know, story about David Chase's fucked up mom.
But I can definitely see going to therapy and becoming so self-involved that, like, not only do you think your parents were, like, bad people, but they actually, like, had it in for you. I feel like that's, like, another – it's one level to be like, all right, well, now I'm realizing that maybe my mom isn't so great. And then they go all the way to the point where it's like, oh, yes, my mother is literally trying to kill me.
Yeah, no, for sure. And definitely that is something of that generation specifically in which, like therapy was a way to find a way to blame all your shortcomings on your parents. And not that that's maybe necessarily changed. I mean, we're definitely a generation that blames boomers and Gen Xers for everything wrong. But we're right is the problem.
We're right. They weren't. Our generation's definitely right.
Yeah. Our generation will always be looked at as the correct generation. but yeah, like what I do love about that line of thinking, though, is that it really does feed into Livia and Junior's line of thinking. I mean, Livia specifically, where she's like, oh, I bet you go there and just talk about how terrible your mother was. Uh-huh. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of on the nose. Like, you got it. Like, that's exactly what we do. You know, so she's not wrong, you know. That's the point.
Yeah. So we got, before we go, we did get an email that I wanted to, a listener email, which he's got a story. So I like listener stories.
Sure.
Yeah. Hey guys, this one is directed more towards Vince since he talks about his crazy Italian grandma a few times. I wanted to know if you have any specific stories where your Italian grandma said or did anything that proved she was on Olivia's insanity level. My grandma moved to Canada from war-torn Italy, so she probably had every right to be as paranoid and nuts as she was. But she did a few things that made me watch Olivia and realize that she was one of the most realistic characters ever written. One moment that resonates with me was when I made a surprise visit to her, but I hadn't seen her for a year. I was in college, so I probably gained my freshman 15. She didn't believe it was me. You're not Brian, you're fat. I had to show her my identification. I had to show her my identification through a fucking screen door to prove it was me, and even then she seemed hesitant. Then she made me take her grocery shopping and gave me $100 for visiting. She did different variations of the Lord take me now, and it mostly ended with her telling my mother she wasn't allowed to come to her funeral. She always complained about our family not visiting enough and how lonely she was. But anytime we did visit her, my mom left in tears and my dad was fucking pissed. Never a dull moment, but looking back on these visits after seeing the Sopranos makes me laugh. Thanks for choosing this show to podcast. It's been fun to listen to, Brian.
Nice.
No, I definitely don't have, my grandma, like, she doesn't, Olivia's way crazier, obviously, but, sure. Just like certain, the things that really resonate for me are, just like general dingbatty things that she does with like not understanding the phone. Like my grandma could not understand leaving voice, like the answering machine was like baffling to her, and then just the general tone of martyrdom. I think that's probably a very common theme where, you know, sure, they love to be the big martyr and to guilt trip you. I think maybe that's just like a Catholic thing in general. Is that
sounds
they,
like a Catholic
that they
thing.
Can only converse in guilt.
Yep. Yeah. That sounds right to me. Yeah. As someone with a Catholic mother, she's an Irish Catholic mother. My God. Yeah. The guilt is. I mean,
what would Jesus think about the way you visit? You don't visit your mother. What would Jesus say?
I'm so sorry. You don't want to have a full conversation with me on the phone. I guess I'll just go ahead and fucking kill myself then. Fuck you, bitch.
I'll just throw myself into the sea.
Yeah, and to me, that's like the interesting thing is, like, for all that Livia talks about, like, dying, like, I guess I'll just kill myself, or I guess I'll just, you know, die. Mm-hmm. Just Lord, take me now. She sure also wants everyone else to die too, which I love.
Yeah.
I love that she's like, she's not going out, you know, like that. She's not going out alone. If she's going out, she's taking Tony with her. And, you know, God bless her, man.
Yeah.
God bless
her. The tone of general morbidity, I think, is another common theme there.
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, lots of very morbid. My mom's conversations. I usually, whenever I come over, I get updates on who is hurt.
Which family members are dying and how bad they're doing.
Which ones are dying. Yeah, how bad people are doing. I mean, I swear, there's one family friend who has been, quote, dying slash killing himself for literally 2 decades now. And I'm like, at this point, he's going to die at a ripe old age.
Yeah.
So, life well lived.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
My mom is, you know, technically my mom is not the Italian one or the Catholic one, but I feel like she has told me how this might be like the last time I get to spend with my grandpa for the last probably 10 years. And, he's going to be turning 102 in
God
like 3 months. So, well, yeah.
But that's the thing, at this age now, you know, every time she says this, it's like, just probability wise, it's true.
Yeah, no, I mean,
chances are
all you got to do is look at the actuarial table and you're like, you know, in terms of probability, you're probably right.
Yeah, definitely.
One more thing I wanted to mention. So, I don't know why we missed this, but so you know how, so Tony says something about it being his like it being 1907 in his dream.
Right.
Well,
right, yeah.
There's like it just flashes by. I didn't notice until the second time I watched this. But he comes out of the chemist or the pharmacy, and on the window right there it says chemist since 1907. So that was clearly how like that got into his dream.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That is that sounds like a factoid or a tidbit from a lesser podcast, Vince.
It's definitely an Easter egg. Yeah, we don't usually do Easter eggs, but that's a little Easter egg for you guys.
We don't give a shit about Easter eggs. Enough. We don't want to find a hidden egg. We want the egg to be right in front of us, and then we want to point and laugh at that egg for being so apparent.
Yeah, for being so egg-shaped.
Yeah. Look at it. Look how stupid. What, do you think we're dumb? You think we can't find our own eggs? Fuck you. That's what this podcast is all about.
I'd like to talk about the taste of the egg and, you know, the things, the more sensual aspects of the egg. I don't just want to say that it's there. I don't care.
Yeah. I like to mix it up, put it in a pan, scramble that baby, you know, maybe make a little quiche out of it, you know?
Dribble it on some toast.
Have a little weird breakfast that looks like a dessert but tastes like a breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
What about our Gaba of Afangul? We got anything
We do
week?
Have one this week. Well, we had two, but we've already discussed ubats. We got ubats and jambot.
And what is jambot?
Well, luckily we got our friend Stevie B to explain it all for us.
God bless you, Stevie B.
Hey, how you all doing? I'm Stevie B, and the Italian-American slang word of the day is jambot. Jambot. Me and my long-term girlfriend, soon-to-be fiancé Josie, have been eating. Thanksgiving, out to dinner with our ma, pre-Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving. Let me tell you, we needed a break. I got home from work last night, and Josie had prepared a nice table and was making a beautiful light jambot. American. Tis the season to eat. My girlfriend Josephine and I have been doing just that. Ever since Thanksgiving, it's been loaded with culinary delights of rich, heavy foods. May I tell you, we needed quite a break. Last evening, I came home from work to find my lovely girl preparing a nice, light vegetable stew. Giambotta, and remember, 'tis the season for sharing and caring.
God bless Stevie.
He ended with a little cute Christmas message that I thought was going to be a call to action to subscribe.
No, Stevie B doesn't
share.
Do that.
He doesn't do that. Dude, Stevie B doesn't play that shit. And that's why I love Stevie B. Stevie B ain't about like the shares and the likes and the subscribes. He's not about smashing any of the buttons. He just wants to teach you how to speak Italian American.
He's everything that's good about YouTube and none of the bad things.
Honestly, I think that Bo Burnham should make another version of Eighth Grade, except it's all with Italians who just discover YouTube for the first time.
Yeah. Well, I think Stevie B is always a good place to end.
I think so, too. Thanks, everyone, so much for listening. Our next episode, obviously, will be the season finale of season one of The Sopranos. And stay tuned for that. It's going to be a real, real special episode.
Definitely smash that subscribe button. Smash that like.
We are no Stevie B out here. We would really, really like you to smash all of the buttons and share this with your friends. We are shilling for you and for ourselves. Frogcast@gmail.com to email us with any questions, concerns, stories, corrections you might have. Vince, what's the Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, and thanks so much for listening, everyone. And until next time, I just want to say to you, tiny tears, tiny tears. Now, who sang that, by the way?
Tinder something or other.
It doesn't matter. Until next time, don't stop.
Tinder sticks. Believing. Sorry,
Tinder sticks.
Until next
don't stop.
Week.
Don't stop tiny tearing.
Yeah.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.